Good afternoon, everyone.
Tonight's lesson is 10 things our young people need to know. And we could, of course, enumerate a variety of different things past this, but we want to focus just on 10 things tonight. Now, of course, we all know that Satan is constantly vying for our hearts and our souls, for everyone. And as the lion hunts for the inexperienced and underdeveloped first, so our adversary, a roaring lion, seeks for the inexperienced and the underdeveloped first. In fact, in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 3, it says that the inexperienced go on to a danger that they don't see and they suffer for it. But those who are experienced, those who are prudent, they see the danger from afar and they don't participate in it. And so, certainly one of the crafty techniques of our enemy is to attack those who are inexperienced first. He does this with our young people so that he can simultaneously attack us. Because if you can attack young people or one generation, you can cause all kinds of issues. It's a butterfly effect on other generations as well. He is crafty and he loves to attack in all manner of sordid and ungodly ways. He can even groom an entire generation into full-fledged rebellion by planting seeds of deception very early. In Judges chapter 2 and verse 10, it says that one generation passed away, and a new generation arose that did not know God, and that did not serve God, and did not recall to mind the things that he had done for them. Satan is wily, and he is shrewd in his lawlessness. Andrew, I just loaned a book to him. It's about the Screwtape Letters. If anybody's ever read the Screwtape Letters, it's a very insightful book. It's a fictional book, but it is a very insightful book on the sorts of things that God tries to help us in rejecting temptation, looking at it from the perspective of a fictional demon uncle and his nephew. So very interesting to consider something like that and how Satan attacks us. Because we get these kind of passing statements in the Bible about him being, you know, shrewd and him being kind of wily and crafty and having different sorts of schemes. One of the places that we see that is over in Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6 verse 10 says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm." It's one of many passages that affirm this reality. 2 Corinthians 10 does it kind of as a byproduct, says that God equips us and enables us, sort of similar to Ephesians 6, says, "For the tearing down of strongholds and every lofty opinion that is exalted and raised against our holy God." And so you have Satan working in very crafty ways in which he especially likes to focus on the inexperienced, because the inexperienced are going to be easier to deceive. And so in defense against that perpetual threat, God has provided means by which to counteract that. The Lord has timelessly encouraged parents specifically, but also others, not just parents alone, but everyone. He's encouraged to cultivate godliness in the hearts of young people by developing the seeds of divine dependence that children naturally begin with. Over in the book of Proverbs, we just read from Proverbs 22 and verse 3 about the prudent seeing things from afar and avoiding them, but the inexperienced not seeing those things. Just three verses down from that in Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it." And so it's imperative that every single one of us do the best that we can to try and nurture and develop that dependence on God that children have, that Jesus affirms. In fact, in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, it focuses on fathers in particular. It says, "Don't exasperate your children. Don't drive them away. Show them love. Show them admonition. Raise them up in God's nurture and admonition, and you will find a very godly family." But if those seeds are not watered and cultivated, the heart will turn away from God at an early age and pursue the way of the world. In Genesis 8 and verse 21, just after the flood, God says, I will never again flood the entire earth, even though the intents and thoughts of a man's heart are evil from his youth. It starts very early. Satan is pulling as hard as he can kids' hearts away from God and young people's hearts away from God. Same thing is reiterated later on in Psalm 58 and verse 3 about that intent of the heart, that it gets driven away from God very early by Satan. And so parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends, brethren, we have a very important battle to attend to. It's not just up to the parents. Every single one of us plays a role in that battle. And every person listening to this message contributes to the direction that our children take from an earthly standpoint. Through what we say or what we don't say. Through what we do or what we don't do. We have a responsibility to our young people, and we all need to take that to heart and make a concerted effort to do what we can to influence our young people in the ways of God. They will make the choice, but we will either push them towards that choice in a very graceful and loving manner, or we will pull them away from that choice. And so to that end, today's lesson will outline 10 things that our young people need to know. And again, I want us to keep in mind that all of us can incorporate these ideas. And they're not just for young people to know either. Every point that we make tonight will be true of older people as well. And everyone in between, if you don't fall into those two categories. Those two very arbitrary categories. And so worshiping with these young people, speaking with these young people that we are around, getting involved in the lives of these young people, encouraging the parents who are trying to raise these young people in a crooked and perverse generation, doing those things is vital to the preservation of their souls. And maybe even the souls of the parents as well. And so may God give us a passion to protect and develop spirituality in our young people. Having said all that, let us begin. Our young people need to know that they are a special creation of God. A special and completely unique creation of God. Not just their flesh, not just their mind, but their spirit is completely unique. As Genesis 1 and verses 26 and 27 says, we are all created in the image of God. Every single person who has ever lived, who lives now, whoever will live, is created in the image of God. And that is very good. That is very good. And Psalm 139 and verse 14 says, we're fearfully and wonderfully made. Are we conveying that to our young people? That they are fearfully and wonderfully, amazingly made, designed. There's a shirt that some people have that says, God made me and he doesn't make junk. Are we inculcating that in our young people? He doesn't make junk. He doesn't make worthless things. He makes incredibly valuable, highly unique things. People, spirits. And there will be times where others don't value you or you don't value yourself properly. There will be. But keep in mind that God made you and values you at all times. You are precious, cherished, and treasured. Are those the sorts of things that we are conveying to our young people? Because we live in an age where image and identity is at a crisis. People don't know who they are. They don't know their gender. They don't know their personality. They don't know what they want to do when they grow up. They don't know anything. And so what are we doing to help that image? What are we doing to develop somebody's appreciation, especially a young person who's very impressionable? What are we doing to cultivate that image in them? To remind them that they are cherished and wonderful. Our young people need to know that they are loved unconditionally. Now, we will deal with an expansion on that at another point. But they are loved unconditionally. If they get all A's, they are loved. If they fail, they are loved. If they excel in the business world, they are loved. If they don't and they flop and flop and flop again, they are still loved. If they get first place at the track meet, they are loved. If they don't make the team, they are loved. Titus chapter 2 talks about the responsibility that we have in the church to teach and help each other to develop a sense of love, particularly in the realm of the family. It says that older women are to teach younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. Now, there's a sense in which that should naturally come, but there's also a sense in which that has to be groomed and that has to be developed. John 15 and verse 13 says that there is no greater love that could ever be displayed than that someone would lay their life on the line for someone else and have their life snuffed out for someone else. And guess what? Jesus did that for every single person, including young people. So again, others may not value you as you're supposed to be valued. You may not value yourself, young person, but God values you. And His estimation is the only one that really matters. 1 John 3 tells us that we know love because He showed us love. Because He acted first in showing that love. In our day and age, many young people don't feel loved. They don't. One of the leading causes of death in young people is suicide. And one of the leading causes of suicide is the feeling of loneliness, isolation, and lack of love. And no wonder. Kids are often left to raise themselves or simply be watched by someone else while parents and key influences do other things. Kids deserve parents and influences who are present and who exert great efforts to love them up close, not from afar. And so we need to show young people that we love them. And we need to tell them as well. So often we're quick to say, well, love is something that you show. Love is also something that you say too. Both of those are necessary. Actions without speech can be just as harmful as speech without action. We need to tell young people again and again that we love them, that God loves them. Young people need to know that they are loved regardless of what happens. They are loved unconditionally. Our young people need to know that the truly important things in life cannot be bought. Job 1 and verse 21, Job says, naked I came into the world, naked I shall return. And he lost everything, really. The whole of our life does not consist of our possessions. It consists in whether or not we have appreciated God's valuation of ourselves and whether we have dedicated ourselves to that evaluation. Materialism has taken over, hasn't it? Efficiency, productivity, workaholism are the standard of the world. That should never be the standard among God's people. We often strive to give young people whatever they can ever desire. But research has shown time and time again the damage that results because of that. The harm of this affluence, the affluenza. You remember that on the news? That immediate gratification. Kids need less stuff and more relationship. They need less trinkets, bits, and bobs, and more intimacy. Did you know that the majority of mass shooters in the United States come from middle, upper middle class, and upper class neighborhoods. They have as much as they could possibly want, and yet they don't evaluate people's lives appropriately. Spend time making memories with our young people. If they're your children, great. If you don't have children, or if your children are grown, lavish love upon these young people. Show them God in this world, not make the world their God. Justin shared a meme just a couple days ago. And I love, one of the things that I love about Justin is he's constantly sharing great information and great memes, and he's sharing all this godly material. I love it. A lot better than a lot of other people with their social media. And the meme that he shared was, if we don't teach our children who God is, someone else will teach them everything that he isn't. Young people, our young people need to know that the truly important things in life cannot be bought. Our young people need to know that choices have consequences. Are you free to make any choice that you want? Yeah. But you're not free from the consequences of those choices. Then we could enumerate all sorts of different passages. Numbers 32, verse 23. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes, though, because I love this section of Ecclesiastes. And there are a variety of different points that we could make in regards to this passage. But over in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, starting in verse 9, and really going over into chapter 12 and verse 1. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9, starting, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet, know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. Now, one point that I want to make about this, young people can enjoy being young. You don't have to be the one that says, wait till you're old. Oh, you went outside this week? You went running this week? Wait till you're old. You don't have to constantly say that. They probably know. Be the sort of person that says, enjoy your years. Because in every section of our lives, no matter what age it is, in every section of our lives, there are great and beneficial things about that section of our life. When you're a kid, you're carefree, right? That's kind of what the passage is saying. And then you get older, and the cares start coming in, but there are also things to rejoice about. Independence. Driving, your first job. Moving out on your own. Getting married. There are great things about that. Raising kids. It's difficult, but there are also great things about that. Wonderful things about that. And when your kids grow up and you become empty nesters, there's great things about that too. You can lavish once more the time and the energy into your marriage that had things pulling on it before. And so you get this wonderful privilege, this open door at that point that says, here, there are great things, enriching things to participate in. As you get older and your kids leave the house, you can pay more attention to Bible class. You're not wrangling kids all over the place. There are great benefits. We get so lost in complaining as our bodies break down that we miss out on that. Our young people need to know that choices have consequences. Enjoy where you're at. Enjoy that station of life. But remember the Creator in the days of your youth. Don't push it off to the future. Remember Him now. Slacking off when work needs to be done will result in consequences. Becoming sexually active outside of marriage will have consequences. Experimenting with drugs and alcohol will have consequences. Giving a foothold to worldly mindsets and worldviews will bring consequences. And so rather than explore all the options available to a young person, we should encourage them to spend time thinking about the best option and pursuing it. Slacking off spiritually will lead to spiritual disaster, and so we need to tend the garden of our hearts now, not later. I will make time for God later. No, now. Now. Related to this, there is a right and a wrong. For many years now, we have moved into and even beyond the postmodern era, where relativism has taken over. That's your truth. That's not my truth. That's your truth. And I don't think that that's always... I don't think that was motivated by all bad things either. Let me just make that point. But there are objective rights and wrongs. And we have to teach our young people this. And young people, you have to know this. There are rights and wrongs. We need to be grooming young people in a positive way. Not making them automatons, but getting them to think about their actions. Getting them to think about what is right, what is wrong, what is holy, what is unholy. That's our job. The world preaches moral relativism, subjective standards of right and wrong, situation ethics, tolerance of all methods and choices, saying that they're equally valid. That doesn't change the simple fact of right and wrong, no matter how many or how few subscribe to that. God's rules are not simple guidelines or suggestions. Moses did not come from the come down from Mount Sinai with the 10 suggestions. No, God's ways, God's rules are right. They are black and white, whether we understand them or not. Young people need to know that courage is a must. That making a decision that, you know what, it's probably not best to spend time with this person. Because evil companions corrupt good morals. And good companions reinforce good morals. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12 talks about being an example. Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but be an example in speech and conduct and whatever we do. Whatever our young people do. To be an example. Peer pressure is a powerful force that can lead a young person to make choices that they would not normally make. We need to teach our young people to stand up for what is right, even if they have to stand alone. Which that should never be, because we are the influences that we need to be, right? They never stand alone. We need to teach our young people and ourselves that human life is sacred. You might have to teach them what sacred means, but human life is sacred. We are created in the image of God, in the icon of God. If you take human life, your life may be taken from you. That's how serious that is. Matthew 7, verse 12, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Why? Because we're people too. Because we value ourselves. We should value others. And so we need to teach our young people to be respectful when interacting with others. To make eye contact. Some of us need to work on that. To express appreciation. To offer to help. To leave things the same as my parents always said, or better than you found them. Be courteous. Use manners. Why? Because, another circulating meme, because you will never look into the eyes of someone God does not love and desire salvation for. Ever. Always be kind. No matter who the person is that you are interacting with, they are made in the image of God. Treat them as such. Not just for young people, right? That's a point for us as well. Young people need to know that hard work is worth it. One of the temptations that young people have is to want the things that others have worked for, that have worked years for. You're going on a European trip? I'm going to overlook the fact that you have worked for 40 years, 40 hours a week, to get to that point. I want to do that now. And guess what? I can get a loan from a bank to do that. So that means I can, and I should. That's a huge temptation for young people. That's a temptation for me. My mother and father-in-law are talking about taking a trip to Scotland. And there's a part of me that's like, oh, I would love to do that. I should. I deserve it, right? They've worked hard to get to that point. Hard work is worth it. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10, one of many places in Scripture says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Colossians chapter 3, go ahead and turn to that one for me. Colossians 3, verse 22 through 24. And Colossians is only four chapters long. And so what Paul was writing here by inspiration of the Spirit had to be pretty terse. He had to pick the very most important things to write down. And look at one of the things that he spends several verses talking about. Colossians chapter 3, starting at verse 22. This is in the context of slaves, but look where the direction he goes. Slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord rather than for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. For he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. There is a reason that people use the expression a good Christian work ethic. That's a very southern expression, so if you're not from the south, you might not recognize that. But us semi-southerners, Florida's southern, the part that me and Stephen come from, very southern. Christians of all people should be the most loyal, trustworthy, hardworking, and faithful workers. They should be the best employees. And so our young people need to be taught to have integrity on the job, to do their best, to know who their real boss is, and not to worry about everyone else. Because developing a great work ethic and attitude will take you far in the work world and will give you more opportunity to shine the light of Christ. And that's really the point. And always keep work in its place. That's a struggle for everyone. Keep work in its place. Many have not and have suffered grave consequences. And so if a young person is already working, we need to teach them to keep in mind that if they died tonight, their employer, guess what, would replace them. That the company will move on without them. But if they die tonight, their friends and their family would, in a sense, never recover from that loss. And so we need to teach our young people, and we need to teach ourselves, not to get so busy on making a living that you forget to work on making a life. Two more. Number 9. Marriage is for life. Marriage is for life. That's one of the first things that's laid out in the Bible. Genesis chapter 2. It's one of the last things in the Bible too. The marriage of the church to Jesus. Marriage is so important. Marriage is the bedrock that society is built on. In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus says something very important about marriage. In fact, it's so important that it's repeated in several Gospels. Matthew chapter 19, verse 4, Jesus answers these people that are offering this challenge to him. He says, "Have you not read that God, he who created them from the beginning, made them male and female, and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no one separate." Marriage is to be regarded with honor. It's not an oppressive institution. It is something to be dealt with in honor. And so for young people need to learn that marriage is honorable. Parents need to show their children that you honor your marriage. Because it's one thing to say, honor your marriage, and it's a whole other thing to be smacking them around and mistreating them. Wives, submit to and respect your husbands. Husbands, love your wives and live with them in an understanding and kind way. Highly esteem one another. Outdo one another in love. Marriage is not a certificate. It is not a social contract. It is a holy vow before God that you will stand by your spouse in any and all circumstances. It is not to be taken lightly or seen with the superficiality that our world gives it. Marriage is to be cherished. Last one. Young people need to learn, and we need to show them and teach them, and also, again, take the lesson to heart ourselves. God is the center of everything. He's not first in a list. He is the list. "You shall have no gods before me." It's one of the shortest commands in the Ten Commandments. It's still something that's true today. "You shall have no gods before me." 1 Chronicles chapter 28 and verse 9, David is speaking with his son. He says, "My son Solomon, love God. Be passionate. Serve him with every ounce that you have." Proverbs 1 and verse 7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13 to 14, he's tested everything. Solomon's tested everything. He says, "This is what I found. This is the summary of it all. Love the Lord your God. Fear him. And keep his commandments." Why? Because every thought, every action, every word is going to be taken into judgment. God takes priority. And so if a young person wins a medal, a ribbon, a certificate, what should they do? What do we teach them to do? Give God the glory. Because he gave them the mind, the talents, the opportunities, the time, the support, and everything else that contributed to that award and that honor. We need to honor God, and we need to teach our young people to honor God with the honors that we receive. Otherwise, it's just fabric, papers, and medals. Destined for a scrapbook or a shoebox that will end up in the garbage. Sports, academics, elementary, middle, high school, college, first jobs, all those things will come and they will go like a vapor. We need to teach our young people to enjoy their season of life, but also to keep their priorities in check. Keep God at the center of all relationships, all jobs, all of schooling. God must be the center. He's not just in the list of things in your life. He is the list. If we wanted to pull this all together in one verse, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Proverbs 4 and verse 23. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, No people are poor who have godly influences, especially those who have a godly mother and father. Every action that we take, every word that we speak, every action that we don't take, every word that we don't speak impacts our young people. They are watching and they are desperately in need of strong godly influences in the home and outside the home. Every one of us is critically important in the lives of our young people. So, get involved in their lives. Discover what their passions are. Get to know what spiritual challenges they face from them, not from a magazine or some news report or on Facebook. Get to know what challenges them from them. Be an influence. So, we have a few young people here. Young people, and those who will listen to this hopefully later on. You have people in your corner. You have people that will go to bat for you. You have people who have experience, wisdom, and passion ready and willing to answer any questions you have and help direct you in the path of the Lord. And so, young people, be receptive to that wisdom. Be open to that wisdom. Some of it will not be helpful. It won't. Some of it will be given without it being requested. Even so, much of it is a rich source of encouragement and edification. Young people, you are incredibly valued, and your souls are infinitely precious, so guard your hearts. There comes a time in every person's life where they begin to recognize right from wrong. And in our day and time, that seems to be a pretty young age. When we actively choose to do wrong, knowing that it falls short of the standard God holds us to, that is a sin. It's not my truth or your truth. It is a sin. Now, we cannot put a specific age on when that time is for every person. The Bible does not. But each person knows whether they recognize right and wrong. And so if we have willingly lied, willingly been unkind, stolen, mistreated, or harmed someone, disrespected, discouraged someone else, or made something a priority over God, we have caused an issue. And if you have done that, whether you are on the young side of things, or on the older side of things, or anywhere in between, you need to think very seriously about what that means for your soul. Choices have consequences. And in the face of a holy God, any and all sins have the capacity to prevent heaven from being a reality for you. And so every single one of us needs to take responsibility for our choices and do what needs to be done to be in a right standing before God. We need to change the way that we think. We need to change the way that we value things. And if we have not, we need to be baptized to wash our sins away. Because in so doing, we will rid ourselves of the guilt rather than callousing ourselves into being unfeeling. If you miss heaven, you miss it all. Choose God and choose a forgiven life and hope in Christ. We're going to sing, "Teach Me Thy Way." And I want you to consider your status before God. Where are you at? Make it right. Tonight. As together we stand and sing.